Lars von Trier's new film releases in Australia this week. It is a grueling, explicitly violent portrayal of a serial killer in which Matt Dillon basically targets mostly women and even children. It's called The House That Jack Built. It also stars the late Bruno Ganz, Uma Thurman and Riley Keough. It premiered last year at the Cannes Film Festival, where it divided critics, I think it's safe to say, and prompted some walkouts. Here's a taste.
Oops. That was a mistake.
Mistake?
Me getting in this car with you. What was it one's mother used to say about not getting into cars with strangers?
Well, I wouldn't know what your mother said.
You might as well be a serial killer. I'm sorry, but you do kind of look like one.
Like me to drive you back to your car?
No, no. Take care of myself. I'm sorry. Were you offended that I called you a serial killer?
No. It's of absolutely no importance to me.
That's Uma Thurman and Matt Dillon in the car together. Get out, Uma, before it's too late. Here to discuss this film, The House That Jack Built, are guest critics Jack Sargent and Kiva York. Welcome to the both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Now, I've brought you in because I think this is a film that, because it's divided critics, is a film that's particularly interesting to dissect. And Lars von Trier is a very, I think, provocative, deliberately provocative filmmaker. First of all, what is this film doing primarily, do you think? Is it doing anything primarily? I mean, is it a critique of masculinity? Is it a critique of art? Is it some kind of metaphor about the male artist? Kiva, what's your take on The House That Jack Built?
I kind of read it as, like, still coming to terms with it. It's a 3-hour long film almost, so there's a lot to process. But I kind of view it as like a vicious self-parody almost. Like, maybe that's a little bit too on the nose, but it's also a film that is entirely on the nose. Like, it opens with Uma Thurman sort of needing to fix a Jack, and Jack pulls up and she's like, oh, everyone has a Jack. So it's very self-referential and very self-aware in that sense. And it's kind of like, I view it as Lars von Trier sort of making this grandiose film about the artist as murderer.
Because Matt Dillon is, he plays an engineer who really wants to be an architect. So he's the kind of very prosaic side of the same coin. He wants to be the other side of the coin. He wants to be an artist. He wants to be an architect. He's trying to build a house throughout the film. Intermittently, we see it. And he keeps being unable to build this house. He keeps bulldozing it in various sort of vignettes presented in the film. Is this primarily then a film about art and the impotence of the failed artist?
I mean, that's certainly one reading of the film, but is the house not also post, you know, the House of Usher, isn't it? Our unconscious. And this is a character who's a sociopath or a psychopath. And then, you know, there's one sequence where he's practicing making normal expressions in the mirror and he's trying to appear normal, in inverted commas, and he can never finish this house. And of course, by the time he finishes the house is the time he is the end of the film, and he realizes what's going to happen to him, you know? So he only kind of develops as a character by the end, and his personality kind of builds throughout the course of the film and changes quite drastically.
Do you think that there is that sort of...
I think in the first... So the film's separated into segments based on incidents.
Which essentially his kills.
Killings, yeah. And the first one is he almost doesn't say anything. And then by the end, he's getting much more linguistic. He's talking and he starts explaining to the last people why he's looking for a certain kind of bullet and stuff like this.
Yes.
So it's like his personality isn't there and slowly emerges as the film goes on, and the final house he builds is the only house he can build. Let's just put
which
it that
is
way.
The house. Well, it's
so. Do you think he like realizes himself through these murders? That's his self-actualization. Do you think the film vindicates those acts of killing?
I don't think it's his self-actualization, because the actual house he wanted to build never gets built.
True.
Let's talk about the violence in the film, because it's very violent and it's quite grueling.
You know, like, I don't think it is that violent. I watched it in Europe in December, and I watched it again last night, and I think there's a lot of talk about the violence in the film, but for a film about a serial killer, it's got comparatively little violence in it. I'm not saying
what we see is explicit, though. I mean, when we see 2 seconds of a knife cutting through, and if there are little listeners listening, just block their ears for a moment, but a knife cutting through a breast, a few seconds on screen, it's quite a shock.
It's a shock, but it's nowhere near what you'd see in like a gore film, a B movie or something like that.
But and it's I think not a gore film.
Yeah, it's not exactly, and it's a film where it's about psychology, and it's, can we say, I mean, the meta narrative of the film is like
it's almost a
confession.
Like
he's confessing to someone.
I think it's clear from the beginning, if you know your sort of classical history or Renaissance. I mean, this is a film that references a lot of art, and he's referencing Dante's Inferno, because we're hearing in between each episode him confessing his murders to someone, and it's pretty clear it's Virgil. And so it's like,
calls him Virgil. He's kind of like a psychiatrist
and he's
figure.
Played by Bruno Gantz, but most of the time we're hearing that over a black screen.
I want to
go back to violence, though, and just talk about one particular scene with Riley Keough, which I think is quite a great example of the violence that's sort of verbal and not actually physical in the film. We're going to play that now. I'll play you a clip. And a warning, there is some strong language ahead.
Have we figured out the difference between lions and tigers?
Tigers have stripes.
And where do they live?
Africa?
And the difference between an architect and an engineer?
Architect draws houses.
An engineer?
Also draws houses?
You call that a difference?
An engineer reads music. An architect plays music. If that's something that your limited brain can process.
Why do you always have to be so cruel? I'm not completely stupid.
That fucking depends on your definition of completely.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, there's a lot of psychological violence in here, which in the film, which I think's well depicted. The acting is, I think, always very good in the Lars von Trier film.
I mean, just in regards to the violence, like, I do feel like it's quite a violent film, but at the same time, like, personally, something about, like, Lars von Trier is very good at doing these touches of humor. And for me, somehow that's comforting, but there was just enough of that. Like, you know, there's some taxidermy, human taxidermy that goes on in one of the incidents.
Which becomes a gag.
And it's like, it's quite horrific. I was kind of like, oh gosh. And then you see there's the reveal and it's like, okay, you know, I'm weirdly fine with this.
Well, what I found interesting, especially about that clip you just played, is the violence is very much about his behavior in general, rather than specific acts of violence. So when we talk about violence in cinema, we often talk about, you know, somebody being shot or whatever. But because it's linguistic, and because he's so obnoxious, and especially in his treatment to this woman, and the way he's talking, insulting her, just belittling her continually. And I saw that, when I saw that in the cinema, people were very quiet about that. They were, you know, no one was amused by that. I mean, it was very unpleasant, and that's good. That's a film that makes you think about the way that language actually
totally
is a form of control. And
that scene was one of the hardest to watch. Like, this is a girl who he's presumably sleeping with or has some sort of romantic interest in, and he calls her simple because he doesn't think much of her mental capacity.
What is it about the serial killer that's having a bit of a moment right now?
Yeah, it's something that's like, you know, the Ted Bundy tapes have just come out, and the Zac Efron movie where he plays Ted Bundy will come out soon. That just premiered at Sundance, incredibly vile and extremely close or something like that. And so there's sort of like this conversation going on at the moment about, why is there this cultural fascination with these men who obsessively kill most often women? And like Jason said, like you said, most of Jack's victims in this film are women, although there are some men, just to mix it up. But yeah, this film is set in the 70s over the course of 12 years in the Pacific Northwest, and I kind of find it interesting. It's a period piece, not only in the sense that it's set in the 70s, but I think there's sort of, at this point, like a collective nostalgia around figures like Manson or Ted Bundy. And Jack is very, as a serial killer, he's constructed very on the nose. He's got the Jeffrey Dahmer glasses. He's got the Patrick Bateman raincoat. He's got an Ed Gein thing going on.
Are you suggesting the serial killer as a figure in popular culture, if we can just kind of disconnect the reality of serial killers to their depiction at them for a moment, is a very 20th century figure?
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, like, this has been written about, but that sort of serial killing was a thing that kind of came up with industrialization. And now in the 21st century, I don't know, something about that kind of, we have spree killings now. You know, there are no figures like Manson now that people are sort of hiding in their homes from. It's these people, and most often men still, who just kind of lose it and turn up at a school and shoot a bunch of people. So
there's a sort of retro flavor to this in some ways that
I want to step in here.
Yeah.
I think it's important to say that Manson wasn't a serial killer. That's a different case. So and the serial killers this film references, and the fact it's in the Pacific Northwest is very interesting, because of course supposedly in the 70s and 80s that was where most serial killers were. I don't know if that's true, but I remember that being, you know, one of the things you'd hear. And obviously Ted Bundy, I believe he was around that, the Pacific Northwest. And there was the Green River Killer as well.
I don't know that one.
And so it's almost like, you know, That seems to be of that period and that space.
More broadly, this is a film critiquing the great predominantly men and male tyrants and mass murderers of the 20th century. We've got, I think, Pol Pot's in there, certainly Hitler, Stalin.
There's references to all of those figures within the film, yes.
So is it some kind of, I mean, why are we watching this for 2 hours, do you think? I mean, is it, on one level, I think Lars really is a great director of these very tense cat and mouse sequences that always end badly. Is it just about us being, is he trying to implicate us as voyeurs and make us feel guilty about that? Because voyeuristically, there's some kind of pull from this film. I mean, we're compelled to a degree to watch how badly everyone's going to get chopped up.
But I mean, serial killers have been part of popular culture. And the figure of the serial killer has been part of popular culture for a long time.
The vampire, I guess.
Bluebeard comes to mind. But then, you know, there's various, you know, the history of cinema is the history of depiction of crime. You know, M, you know, for example, right at the beginning of, you know, the 20th century. So you get these great films that have engaged with that, because it's about the unconscious, it's about what we repress, it's about our fears, and that's all really important, I think.
But a final opinion from both of you on the house that Jack built, as given all of that, which I agree with, is it something you'd recommend people to go and watch as cinema? Does it work for 2 hours, Kiva?
I said to you earlier, like, I really enjoyed it in spite of myself. And maybe that should be the tone with which you enter the cinema. If you choose to, like, know that you're in for something, it is going to be grueling. But I think it is quite a beautiful, accomplished film, to be honest.
I actually think it's one of the better Lars von Trier films. To me, it harks back to his earlier work almost in a way. I like it. I liked its kind of stripped back nature. It was beautifully shot. The conceit of having Virgil in there was great. The last 20 minutes.
I think they hit quite a sweet spot in terms of black humour the last 20 minutes.
Well, the whole emphasis on catabasis and going down, you know, into the circles of hell and so on is fascinating. And the idea of the serial killer, you know, in that sense.
Matt Dillon's also great in it.
Yeah.
This stony-faced killer. I think he's, and you know, the ex-teen star.
Yeah, that's kind of like my main image of him in films like The Outsiders and stuff, like 80s films, part of like the Brat Pack. So to see him do this turn as like a middle-aged man, I think he's really, like, he gives a very controlled performance, and it's filled with lots of like mood swing. He's very hard to predict, even in the middle
We get that tear rolling down the cheek when he's having the reminiscing about being a child and seeing the workers in the field with the scythes,
which is really bizarre, because of course you would never have seen that growing up in the early 60s.
it's highly symbolic.
A kind of symbolic mythical landscape that's at play throughout.
All right. Well, thanks very much to the both of you for coming in and dissecting Pleasure. This very interesting film, The House That Jack
term,
Built.
Dissecting.
Thank you.
Your loaded term. That's guest film critics Jack Sargent and Kiva York. Let's play a track from the soundtrack of The House That Jack Built. This is Bowie.